Hello and welcome everyone to the Traction Stage podcast. Traction is what every founder in an early stage startup is looking for. It is the clear evidence that the market wants your product or service, and it's when things start getting bigger and better. I'm Alexandre Azevedo, and as your host, I'll interview startup entrepreneurs from all over the world to better understand which were the elements they've counted on and the challenges they faced before finding traction for their businesses.
In today's episode, I'll interview Joe Barrell, co-founder of Trax.
Well, hello, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Great. Great. So congratulations. First of all, congratulations for Trax success. And thank you so much for accepting the invitation for this interview and be welcome to the Traction Stage podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me and happy to share from my experience.
So before going directly to the story or understanding Trax's story on how it has generated traction, I would like to ask you about to briefly understand about the problem that you are solving and what kind of solutions does Trax offer to solve that problem?
So Trax is solving the problem of digitizing the physical world of retail. So essentially, we work with global brand manufacturers like Coca-Cola and Procter & Gamble, as well as retailers like Tesco and Carrefour. And we are using computer vision algorithms to put cameras in the point of sale, taking pictures of shelf space and analyzing those products, those SKUs on shelf in a very high level of accuracy and in real time. And this information is helping those companies to perfect their in-store execution, presentation on the shelf, presence, pricing, promotions, and the interrelations between competing products on shelf.
Great. So. Of course, we are not going to enter or detail in each and every detail of your solution, but I invite every listener that or everyone that is listening to this podcast right now to go to Trax Retail, TRAXRetail.com, to understand about and know more about this wonderful solution that Trax has been offering to its customers. So, Joe, let's go back to 2010, which was the year of foundation of Trax. And before the moment that you have founded the company, I would really like to understand about who were the co-founders or what were your backgrounds and how have you met each other?
So there were two founders for the business. One is myself and the other is Dror Feldheim. Essentially, I'm coming from a series of startups that I've been establishing. So this is not my first venture. I was working at SunGard Data System for many years, for about 7 years after graduation from university. And then after 7 years, decided to move from the corporate world and open my first startup. Then there was a second, then somehow through life mysterious ways, I found myself in Singapore coming out of Israel. And then I sold my latest startup called CenturyEye. And I was looking to do some kind of a sabbatical after selling my company. Dror, my co-founder, came from Switzerland, where he was living for 12 years. He's also an ex-Israeli, and he came to Singapore following his wife. And his background is more about retail execution. So he was working for a private equity fund, which used to invest in consumer brands. So he knew that world very well. And he came to Singapore and had an idea in his head that if that problem of visualizing the physical shelf in retail, that can be a tremendous help and tremendous business value to global manufacturers. We met by coincidence. Our daughters were going to the same kindergarten, so that as random as that. And then because they were new in Singapore, we hosted them in our house, and this is how we first met.
Whoa, such a coincidence, right?
Yes.
So I was going to ask you exactly one point that you have mentioned about the idea generation. I mean, or you've mentioned that Dror has had experience in retail industry, and he had this idea about building something. Or did you have in that time the perfect idea of what Trax would become, or was just something near that?
Actually, it was not exactly that. So when we started, the main theme about visualizing the physical shelf, that was there from the beginning, from day one. Dror came with the need, and I came with the technological solution. But actually, when we looked at that, our first application that we thought of was really to harness it more for shopper marketing, to put this technology through glasses so people can shop in the store, and essentially the computer vision algorithms will track what people are looking at. So to have more a consumer tracking device when he's shopping. But the first ever meeting we ever did was with Procter & Gamble. And we just exploited an opportunity where a very senior guy from Procter was visiting Singapore. Actually, he was one of the people heading the innovation side on P&G. And we presented to him the solution, and he basically said, "This is very nice, but if you can harness the same technology and help us to find out about share of shelf, planogram compliance, perfect store conditions, etc., that would be more valuable to P&G at that moment in time." So basically, a few days after we established the company with that mindset in mind, then we actually shifted based on P&G feedback to that specific focus we have today.
So with the feedback from Procter & Gamble, you have shifted have iterated your value proposition. But let me understand before that, how did you exactly build the product, or how was this first MVP or this first version of Trax, how was it like?
So we had a very good vision and strategy how to build the solution, but we knew it's going to take time. And in the solution, there are many automated sections and some manual sections, but it mostly supposed to be completely automated as it is today. But obviously, at the beginning, we didn't have time, resources, or personnel to do everything automated. So essentially what we did, we broke the solution into components, and some components which were automated in vision, we actually did them manually. We broke the process in a way that, since the scale at the beginning is a fairly low scale, then you could actually replace many components with manual alternatives.
So this first MVP, of course, at the present moment, you have a lot of features and you have a lot of automated data processing and analytics. And in that time, you did something much more lean and just used the computer the computer capacity just to view the pictures. And or to take the pictures and not actually to analyze it. Was something like that, or
no? So we actually analyzed the images, but we just used the manual people to analyze the images, and by doing that we also were building in parallel the recognition engine, and we used that annotation also to train the engine how to recognize the products. At the beginning, what we did was pilots, so the volume of images was not high. Most of the effort was educating the market. So in that sense, that manual replacement was not an inhibitor for the technology to go and bring a good solution to market. When it comes to the features, you are right. We had hundreds of possible features that we wanted to have. But essentially, we followed the first pilots and the first clients, to see where to focus and where is the most important features, the most important elements of the solution that will bring them the immediate value. So in that sense, Procter & Gamble actually were very instrumental at the beginning in directing us at how the solution should look like, what kind of KPIs, what kind of elements should be focused, and what features are the most important ones.
Right. And how long did it take for you to get this first version of your product to and show it to Procter & Gamble or the very first customers?
So the company started in October 2010. Our first live pilot was in August 2011. So about 9 months after the company was established, we actually had the first live deployment.
And was just you and Dror, or have you hired more people to do that?
So we had some funding at the beginning. Initially, we ourselves put some funding, and then we had some early investors, kind of a seed funding. So we had a small development team in Israel doing the initial development of the product, and we hired one or two people in Singapore to help us. So altogether, the company was maybe around seven people.
Seven people. So just to understand this first part, which is very important for early stage entrepreneurs, you've mentioned that you have funded, and with that funding from yourselves and from seed round, you have been able to get the team to build this first version of your MVP. How was this effort of raising funds or this raising these early funds when you had actually no traction for your startup? How difficult it was, and how did you manage to be successful with that?
To be honest, we were very lucky, and it was not that difficult. The seed money that we had came from people who knew us. You can call it friends and family. In the first probably 2 years of the company. And we did one thing which was, I think, good, and people can learn from that. We were the founders, but Dror knew from a previous acquaintance, a lady in Switzerland with the name of Tamara Minix-Kokalo. And she was a very senior person within consumer brands manufacturers. So she was working for Kraft and Cadbury and other big Coca-Cola and other big brands, and Procter & Gamble as well, actually. And we brought her to be, and she was just leaving Kraft. So we brought her to be the CEO of the company from day one. So while we were focusing on the solution and on delivering the first version of the product, she was basically providing us not only with her wisdom and experience and strategic direction, she brought a lot of credibility into the team and into the idea. She was also one of the early investors who invested in the company. So I think that while she was there, she could reach out to her, to the people she knew and to her Rolodex. And she was not only opening doors for us to do more pilots and get market traction. It made it easier to get seed investment from people who are kind of close to the industry. Everybody that understands that industry immediately saw the need for the solution. And I think that it gave a lot of comfort to people to see her in the CEO role. And that made it possible to get fairly easily the initial funding we needed.
Yeah. And how did you meet her?
She was just a neighbor of Dror in Switzerland. So again, it's more like a coincidence in the sense that Dror knew her just from the neighborhood, and they were in touch. I think their children went to the same school also together. So in that sense, when she left Kraft, then essentially draw approach her and propose to her to be the CEO.
Great, great. And okay, you have this, I'm visualizing, you have this funding, you have this contacts and Rolodex, and you have this first version of your product, or you're building some features. How exactly was the process of talking with customers, talking with people? I know that you have mentioned about PNG and the great feedback, great advices they have give you. But what kind of other validations have you received in that time? How was the process of validating the platform?
The best validation for us was talking to clients, and most global manufacturers have innovation labs and people who are responsible for corporate development and finding new technologies. So in that sense, it was not that difficult to get people to listen to us and to vet the idea and the technology. And again, both Dror and Tamara came from the retail industry. So in that sense, they knew quite well about the needs of the industry itself. So from whoever we spoke to, whether it was our early investors or the clients which we were pitching the solution, we understood quite fast that if the solution will work at scale and in a very good accuracy and operations, the value it can bring to those clients is enormous.
In order to generate the traction, because of course the validation process is something, and you had a lot of contacts, and you have something that people put a lot of value in and were very excited about it. But what about the generating more traction for the platform in these years? What kind of marketing strategies did you notice that really worked well for you?
So it was a very tough struggle. So those companies, I don't know if you're familiar with such companies, these are huge conglomerates. Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, Nestle, InBev, these are all our first clients. But at the beginning, we were mainly piloting. And to get a pilot with a Procter & Gamble or Coca-Cola is not that difficult. They have, again, innovation labs. They have a lot of budgets to try out new technologies and new things. And to try it out, it's fairly easy to do. But to move into a production state where those companies sign with you long-lasting agreements with recurrent revenue, this is a whole completely different ballgame. And it was very difficult to do that. And it took us a long time to get our first ever real recurrent revenue contract. So as I mentioned before, in the summer of 2011, we had the first pilot. Actually, the first recurrent client which really signed an agreement, long-term agreement, to use the service was only in the summer of 2013. So it 2 years of pilots and all kinds of pilots with all kinds of companies in all kinds of places. Many of the pilots lasted multiple months. Some of them even for 6, 8, and 12 months. Eventually, that was a very tough journey. We learned a lot from that journey. The product became more mature. We added features. We were becoming more robust. But the only breakthrough, if you would like to call it that way, was when we signed our first ever recurrent real contract. And when we had that, suddenly all the contracts started to follow and coming one after the other. So we needed to have that first one that basically bet on our solution. And that gave us enough credibility in the market to go and sign up additional ones. Within the same ecosystem of the first client. The first client was Coca-Cola in Australia. And then after that, with additional brands like others who came after that.
Well, so to really get some recurring revenue customer, It only happened in 2013, approximately 2 years after you have launched the first version of the product or the MVP. And that's really important because we tend to think that that all the successes happen really straightforward, and with just a few months you're getting recurring revenues and etc. So it is important to get to this notion that you have struggled a lot in order to really start selling your solution for people, even considering that these companies were very open to this kind of initiative. And why exactly did these pilots take so long? What was the process of convincing people like?
One of the challenges that we had to face is that it's not only a pilot to prove a specific technology works or a solution works. It's first is to convince that this technology exists and this technology actually is accurate and is consistent and reliable. Because we were the first to come to the market with such a solution. And we needed to educate the market. So the pilots were not only to prove something very specific, it also was a broader conviction around computer vision as a tool which is reliable and consistent. And in many cases, the people running the pilot and not necessarily the people signing the budget for a rollout. And you needed to convince the whole value chain in order to do that. And then that was a process of educating the market. So that was, I think, one challenge. The second challenge is that our solution specifically changes the way those companies are operating in the market. They need to educate their sales force. They need to invest in the different hardware sometimes. They need maybe to buy or upgrade some of the mobile devices of their field force. So there are other obstacles that needed to happen. And over time, obviously, by just a normal course of business, those devices would change and the more advanced technology was on the hands of those front guys that are supposed to take the images. So that was also a matureness process that happened in the world, moving from, I don't know, iPhone 1 to an iPhone 4 and iPhone 6, etc. So that was another kind of vertical or dimension which we struggled to do. And the last part is really to prove that operationally our valued solution is actually bringing a tangible value, increased revenue, increased market share. And it took time for those companies to test those elements over time and to be convinced that it is showing a consistent result of improvement. And normally those big companies are very cautious, especially when working with small companies and startups like Trax. So in that sense, they took more time to vet that the consistency, reliability, predictability of the results is really there.
Wow, very clear, very interesting explanation that involves education, that involves the reliability of the system, process restructuring and industry maturity as well, or technology maturity as well. Excellent, great explanation. And before ending the episode, Joel, I would love to hear from you a piece of advice for startup entrepreneurs that want to go to this process of building a startup and start generating generated traction for their businesses. What kind of things would you say then?
I would maybe have in the first to mind is maybe two advices. That we knocked on many, many doors. So not to be despaired and continue believing in your idea. And the more doors we opened, the more opportunities and the more traction we had in the market. So that was a very good strategy, which gave us a lot of opportunities. And doors, it's not only clients, it can be advisors, it can be bankers, it can be investors, it can be many people. And eventually, most industries in the world, especially when you're talking about niche market solutions like trucks, are closed ecosystems and a good thing. And normally travels, the word of mouth travels fast and people get to know, to hear about it. So that's one advice. The second advice that we did, we started with the biggest companies out there. I mean, maybe when you think about it, maybe sometimes people think it's easier to go to the smaller companies, which are more agile in terms of taking decisions. If we would have gone to a small company, probably we can get a contract before 2013. But I think that we learned from that, our experience at least, that going to the large companies is the better strategy. Yes, it takes more time, but those companies have budgets for innovation. They are open to try new things. They have people dedicated for that, so the ability to get pilots is easier. And the traction, the reputation that those companies having, and even while piloting with them, that reputation is helping the company a lot when it comes to its branding and its fundraising efforts. And eventually, if one of those pilots becomes into a contract, then the reputation for the overall market is such that it will be much easier to get any other contract in the market versus the other way around. If you start with a small, small company, it doesn't matter. If you have 10 small companies, still the Procter and the Coca-Cola of the world, we look at you and say, this is not count, you know, this doesn't count. It's just small companies, etc. So I think that was a good strategy as well. And the last point is that we found an auxiliary ecosystem to trucks. In our case, was Salesforce Automation Systems, which was a very fiercely competitive market. It still is today as well. And we offered that component, that image recognition capability, as a differentiator to those companies. And we managed to have a lot of alliance or partnership contracts signed in those early days with many of those companies. It didn't generate to trucks nothing, even not $1 from those partnerships. But those companies, when they met with the retail guys on the brand manufacturing side, and since there were many of those companies all trying to compete with one another, and all of them trying to get the same type of advantage, that was a very effective marketing tool, which really helped us in getting traction in the market.
Yeah, so about this second point that I have mentioned regarding the reputation, this is something very interesting. In fact, I have interviewed Ned Phillips from Bamboo, which is a startup from Singapore too, and he has mentioned something very similar that he has done about talking with big customers, big clients. And of course, this is going to be a tough process and you have to knock a lot of doors. But in the moment that you are able to get one customer to use your platform, your one big client to use your solution, you get this reputation that is going to help you to get more customers, more clients. And I think that's what you were mentioning about getting the big customers instead of just trying the easiest ones. That's right?
Yes, exactly right.
Okay, so we have a lot of insightful information, and I really would like to thank you so much for your time and for accepting this interview. And of course, congratulations again for Trax success, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, and enjoyed the speaking, and hopefully that will be beneficial to you, to the audience.
Yes, be sure, it will be. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye, Joel.
Bye-bye.
And how about you? Did you like this episode? Please visit us at attractionstage.com and leave your comment. There you will find all the episode's show notes as well as additional information about the founders and their startups. I'll wait for you there. Bye-bye.